burger.
Everybody, welcome. It is take 270, which is technically take 271 because we had that bonus take like 4 years ago. But we are here with the owners and operators of Maven Cinemas, Joe and Devorah. How do you guys pronounce your last name? Is it Governale?
Governale.
Yes,
Italian.
I was about to say, that has to be Italian.
No, yes, for sure.
We love it. They have taken over the theater that like was the theater of mine and TC's hometown. What was once formerly the town cinemas is now Maven Cinemas. And we're super excited to talk about it because it feels like finally it's more relevant than like we've ever lived there too, and get to know kind of what came to be for Maven. I've had quite a few people chime in and DM us and tell us like, oh, like Maven rocks, like we really love what they're doing there. So we're excited to jump into it, see what the genesis was and what the future holds. So without any further ado, TC, do you have any orders of business or anything that you would like to bring up?
I do not. I'm just hyped to have Joe and Devorah here and to hear more about their story. And I guess my first question is, and like my first thought initially is, because we went there for The Empire Strikes Back on December 30th, which was a blast. You guys were just hustle and bustle and super busy. And I noticed when I ordered my ticket that you guys still have Sticky Shoe, that you still kind of have kept the name a little bit with some theaters. Is it just one theater or is it both of the theaters?
It's actually not the theater. It's actually a day of the week. So I know most movie theaters do Tuesday for their discount day. So we wanted to make sure we left that day for all of the members of our community that want to go, you know, get that deal for their new release experience. But when you want to have that retro film experience, we do the Sticky Shoe special on Monday. So we do that in homage to the, like you guys said, the decades long nickname that theater has had. We do try to promise people that it is in name only. We really do try to mop our floors. So hopefully you're not leaving your shoes behind like you have in decades past. But yeah, Mondays is a great day to come, whether it's for a date night or your whole family or even just yourself. And you get to get in adults $5 a ticket and kids are $2. All movies all day long on Mondays. So yeah, that's what that's about.
Oh, I like it. That's awesome.
Yeah,
I did not notice any Sticky Shoes when we were there, so it's all working great. The as a side note as well, I am a big Haritos guy, and so the fact that you guys got, you know, you got your soda fountain, but you also got Haritos and some bottled drinks in the back. Massive.
Yes.
Yeah, loved that.
Yeah, we, of course, have started with all the classics, like you said, soda and popcorn and candy, and we're really hoping that we get to expand that concession menu soon. That's one of our big dreams. You're asking what's coming in the future. We sure hope we get to offer more things, especially when you are in a marathon. It's hard to sit through, you know, a 12-hour Lord of the Rings marathon on just popcorn. So, yeah, we're working on expanding that menu.
I know someone that was there for the marathon at Maven. You guys did that when? Was it over
November?
Late November.
Yeah.
Okay. You know what? I'm glad you did it over November because November and Lord of the Rings is just it belongs together.
That's what we said.
Yeah. Yes. That is a November movie. But I will say the entrance to Maven Cinemas is very, very clean. I love like the posters that you guys put around. One of my favorite things that you guys added was that chalkboard of recommendations of movies. Do you guys lean on that sometimes and actually?
All the time. Literally,
yeah,
all the
really
time.
Do. I mean, obviously, we love movies. And, you know, anyone who does, you have this list of movies that you either love yourself or you know are popular because of, you know, interactions with folks. But we also understand that we don't know everyone's preferences all the time. And we've been surprised. Every time the chalkboard fills up, we take a picture of it. And then we'll erase it and let it fill up again. And then as we go to make our monthly schedule, we do rely on that, you know, to fill in gaps in the schedule. Or very often, because we work closely with all of the studios and they approve all of our movie selections, sometimes some of our first choices get eliminated. They get turned down for any number of reasons. Mm-hmm. And so then we, you know, it's very common for us to go to the board and be like, all right, what are the movies that have been written up there a lot recently?
Times, yeah.
And oftentimes the movies we select to fill in those gaps are from the chalkboard.
Yeah. You know, and as much as we consider ourselves big movie geeks, there are just, you know, over 100 years worth of titles out there. So we're just not going to know everything. And it's always fun when we see a title that we go, oh my heavens, we haven't thought about that movie in so long. Yes, we have to do that movie. Or when someone writes a title and then you see multiple people come, and we've seen titles get circled and then lots of arrows and then a times two and a times three. And uh-huh. we look at each other and say, oh, all right, I think we need to get that one on the screen. An example of that was John Carpenter's The Thing. We were trying to find, you know, what do you play between Christmas and New Year's, where it's not really Christmassy anymore, but you've got that kind of winter flavor. So we're like, oh, The Thing, of course, all that ice and snow.
It was written on the board. And then the next time we looked, there's a times two up there. Mm-hmm. Times three, then mm-hmm. times four, then times five. And then you get up to times five or times six. And we're like, all right.
What didn't it mark?
Yeah, people want to see this movie. Like, we brought it and we had a great
movie. Let's show that movie. Sometimes we're able to get them up right away. Sometimes we've already got some programming set, so it gets pushed out a little bit. And then, of course, the thing that always makes us sad is when we see a title written up multiple times and we're like, okay, we need to do this one. And then the studio kicks it back and has some reason why they're just not releasing the rights to that at that time. I want to say Secret Life of Walter Mitty was one of those. It got written up multiple weeks in a row. And we said, hey, we got to get this film out there. And then they turned us down. We were so sad. So that happens too, where we really want to give, you know, I mean, that's so important to us, is give the community what they want. As much as we love seeing movies, it's really about our community. And so, yeah, we always get bummed when we can't give them what they want, but you know, we are just so thrilled that the studios work with us at all.
And it's even more so with like these films. Like, you guys have such a great, your programming is awesome. I kind of want to get into, you know, we've got Joe and Devorah. Can you guys give a little introduction and in, like, where your relationship with film started, or how it started?
Yeah, totally. You should go first.
I've always, most of my growing up, I was torn and trying to decide whether I wanted to go into a career of live theater or whether I wanted to go into a career of movie theaters or movie making movies.
Film, yeah.
Film. I loved both so much, and I really bounced back and forth so much between them. And for me, it comes from a love of storytelling. I believe, like, wholeheartedly in the power of storytelling and the importance of storytelling to advance as a civilization, to tell, you know, history and recount stuff. I just, any form that story takes, I love. And so for me, that, you know, that was one of the two forms between live theater and movies that really always has had a profound effect on me. And I think it's the combined visual aspects that you get from those formats versus others like books and other medias of storytelling.
Yeah.
Well, I've just always loved the power of storytelling and wanted to be involved in that. So film was just kind of a natural place for me to fall in love with. And pretty much my entire career has bounced back and forth between either movie theaters or live theater in one way or the other. So,
yeah. You know, and it's funny because I thought I just really liked movies growing up, but as we've been opening this we opened this 4 months ago, we're coming up on 4 months, it's put me in an opportunity to reflect a lot on kind of my journey to, you know, my relationship with loving film. And it's actually caused me, as I tell stories about movie experiences from the past and being excited to bring some of these films that I loved when I was younger back to the big screen for folks to experience, I realized that I actually had, my dad was just a huge film lover. Like, that was just such a big part of his life, to make sure that we were seeing a lot of these classic films. And the same thing happened with my grandmother when I was college age. I wound up being able to help her out right after my grandfather passed away for a couple of years. And man, that she had cable. We never had cable growing up. She had cable. That was such a big deal way back when. And she had the Turner Classic Movie Channel. And I'm telling you, every day we'd sit and watch those movies, and she would tell me what was going on with the those actors and the tabloids at the time that those films came out. And I could see how passionate she was about that. And she was such a hero for me. She had literally fought Nazis when she was a teenager. So I always had so much respect for her. And, you know, she took me back to her, that, you know, that golden Hollywood era. And she brought that era to life for me through her experiences. And I just have loved that we have been able to do that now for members of our community. We actually had a couple that came in. They had been kind of passing our building several times and would see our marquee and had been telling themselves, we're going to stop in there and see what they're about. And finally, you know, pulled the trigger on that. And we sat and chatted with them for about 10 minutes while they kind of asked, you know, about our programming and how our whole thing works. And it was so fun to watch, especially the dude in the relationship was just very like, this is so cool. You are literally bringing generations together where you get to have some film create a connection where they get to experience nostalgia. They get to share past experiences. They get to make new experiences. And I was like, yes, that's exactly what this is all about for us. That's exactly what this is all about to us. We've got a good handful of regulars who have started attending a lot. And we had, you know, so many examples. We had a grandfather who was bringing his grandsons to every single Golden Hollywood era film he could. And he told us that he loved doing that because he could sit with his grandsons and say, those were the cars that were around when I was a kid. Those were the clothes we were wearing. This is the music we were listening to. This was the world I lived in when I was your age. And it helped him to feel more connected to them. And a wife whose mother had just passed away. And the last film they saw was Christmas in Connecticut, just before she passed, just a few days before she passed away. And we were playing it the day that she drove by and saw our theater for the first time, and how meaningful that was for her to be able to come and feel that connection. And so her and her husband have come to watch every Golden Hollywood era film since they discovered us. And it's really cool to see how your personal love for film and the ways it can be so meaningful to you as an individual can wind up helping you to feel connected to people that, you know, we don't know them very well. We don't know our customers very well, but we do know that we are bringing them joy. We see them come in and we see them get excited. We were talking about The Thing earlier. We had a gentleman who came in that has been his favorite film for his entire life, but never got to see it on the big screen. And so here he was being able to see it on the big screen and check off a bucket list thing he never even knew he had. And that got to be something so great for him. And we love that. We appreciate that we have our love for film and we have the journey that brought us there, but it gets to connect us with so many other people who have that shared love.
Yeah, that's awesome. And what I do love also about your theater is, what was the tagline that you guys have?
Nostalgic films, new memories.
Yeah, that's good. And I remember during COVID, they would re-release these older movies. So I got to see Back to the Future and School of Rock in theaters. And I had an Interstellar as well. And those were movies that Interstellar I did see in theaters. But Back to the Future and School of Rock I didn't see in theaters. So that was really fun to see those. And the next question is, what birthed the idea? What made the idea for your theater?
I worked about, I don't know, 12 years or something, 13 years for a chain in New England, a movie theater chain, as a projectionist and manager, a corporate projectionist. So a lot of experience with movie theaters. And throughout that time, so I was pretty hands-on as far as that went. And I would always joke with Devorah that I felt like the next phase of movie theaters was going to come and we were going to see the decline of multiplexes, and we were actually going to see it go back down to 1 and 2 screen theaters, just because Hollywood wasn't going to be able to support, you know, 24 plexes anymore, you know, with that much content.
And the way that we are changing the way we watch content.
Yeah. And then part of it was like that. And, I love the old nostalgic buildings, the old theaters that have been around forever. Like ours was built in 1950 and it's pretty much been a movie theater for its 74 year existence, which is so cool. And then on top of that, during my time at that same chain, we started a classic series. So once a month, I was able to run it in one location. So once a month, I would pick a film. They would do some advertising for it, and we would bring back one old movie. So we called it a cult classic series, but it was really an early iteration of Maven Cinemas of bring back anything you want, and have an audience. And you know, I was able to, in less than a year, build up about 300 people reoccurring every month to see some old movie on the big screen. And it was really cool. And pretty much from that time, it's been in my head that I believe that this type of movie theater is viable. We all have movies we love. And as much as fun as it is to go see a new movies are often variable. It might be good and it might not. You don't often know what you're getting. But when you go to see a movie you love, a Princess Bride or anything that you love and adore, for me, Jurassic Park will always be my number one movie theater movie. I know what I'm getting and I know I'm going to love it. And so it's kind of, I joked for basically almost 20 years that when we retired, we were going to, because we're the type of people that don't ever stop, we're not going to retire and, you know, go on permanent vacation. We're going to want to do something. So I was like, our retirement plan, our retirement goal is going to be to retire, open a little two-screen movie theater and show classic movies. And that's what we'll do kind of, you know, till we die. So it's just kind of cool, obviously, that we get to do that much earlier than in life than we had kind of joked about. But yeah, so it's been something we've kind of talked about for 20-ish years or so.
Yeah, it's so true. And it's one of those funny things where we saw Maven Cinema, well, we saw Town Cinemas for sale, the Town Hub for sale, and we weren't in the place, you know, for purchasing a building, but we were so thrilled to be able to reach out and have the folks be open to us leasing it. And it's just been such a surprise for it to be able to be this opportunity and the way that everything has kind of fallen into place for it. And it's really fun to watch Joe have this dream of his be able to be realized. And then it's been even more incredible to watch it be meaningful to other people, whether it's because of the building itself or because of the films that we are programming or mix of the two. It just has been, it has been really awesome to watch how it is meaningful to the community to have that place there open again and showing films and just providing, you know, something that we all really need. Emotionally, I also joke often with our customers that it's the closest thing to a time machine that could possibly exist. You're going to an older theater to watch older films, and that's about as close as we're ever going to get to a real DeLorean, where you get to just get this sense of like stepping back in time. And, you know, we need that. We need the escape, and we need to have those communal experiences. We've actually had quite a few, oh my gosh, we've actually had quite a few parents who have made the comment of they really appreciate that we've been showing some of the films we have because they're films that they watch with their kids at home already, but it's so much of a focused and immersive and intense experience to see it in a movie theater. I had a dad who said, I have probably listened to this movie a dozen or more times, but I haven't actually sat and watched this movie in years. And to be in a dark room where my kids can't turn their phones on and we're not going to get up and go swap the laundry over or, you know, go, you know, take care of something in the house or play games on our phone. We are here and we are having a focused film viewing experience. And, you know, that's when you talk to any filmmaker, that was their intention when they made that film, was for it to be experienced in that way. So while we're always going to love watching films from the comfort of our own home, that's never going to go away. But there is just something about that opportunity to be able to go and see that film that is meaningful to you and have that level of an experience again with it. We're just so grateful for the opportunity to provide that.
Yeah, I know that for us, I was, when you did your Star Wars one and we came out to watch Empire Strikes Back, the first movie I ever remember seeing in movie theaters is Star Wars A New Hope, which is my favorite movie of all time. And as I remembered, like, I think last year they also did a 50th anniversary or 40th anniversary of of Return of the Jedi.
Yes.
And as you were doing that special, I realized, oh my gosh, I've never seen Empire Strikes Back in theater. So to go with my mom, because I saw with my mom and our neighbor, and I remember seeing, you know, A New Hope when it re-released. I think it was like a 20th anniversary or something. I was like three or four. So to be able to experience seeing the last Star Wars movie that I need to see in theater with my mom to complete the cycle was like such a very special moment for her. Like as soon as I told her that we were all going to go watch it, she was like, I will buy your ticket. You know, I can't wait to go see it. And she is like, I remember as a kid, like saving up money to go to the movie theaters with my parents. Like I would take them because they didn't want to go, but I would, you know, pay for all of us to go. So I'm also very curious from both of y'all, what was the first movie that you remember in theaters or like really making an impact on you?
Right. So I know I saw films in the theater before this, but the first one that really made an impact for me was Muppet Christmas Carol. And I know my dad took us, he usually did the, like, we watched on VHS tape and we went to Little Caesars and got pizza and we'd watch an older film. And that was the common experience with him for films. But when we went to the movie theaters, he would never let us buy concession. And that always made me so sad, walking by that candy counter and smelling that popcorn and never being allowed, no matter how much we begged, he wouldn't let us get concession. So my parents split right before Muppet Christmas Carol came out. And my grandmother, again, just such an incredible woman, she came out to be supportive of that first Christmas. And she had us do chores around the house to earn money so we could buy whatever concession we wanted. And then she took us to that film. And I just remember standing at that candy counter and I had earned that money and I was being allowed to buy a concession. And to this day, that is still so meaningful to me. And then to just be able to watch that film, and I just thought it was the most incredible movie ever. And, you know, it's such a great universal story, you know, the need we all have to have honest self-reflection and try to be better people. And of course, done by Muppets, what can be better than that? It just, you know, it was such a beautiful moment in the middle of a hard time of life. And it just was this beautiful, like, ray of hope and love. So yeah, that's for me. Very, very meaningful, impactful first movie experience I can recall.
For me, I was trying to remember because the two I remember was The Land Before Time and Oliver and Company. So I was like, it's one of those two. I was like, because I remember both of those. So I was like, let me jump on before we do this thing and let me figure out, because whichever one came out first is probably the one I saw first in movie theaters. So
go through your ticket stubs, right?
Ziploc baggies of them from like decades of them. Yes.
So, you know, Land Before Time came out in 1988, so I was like, all right, that's probably the one, because I think Oliver and Company was later. Looked at Oliver and Company, that was also 1988.
Like, what month were
so
they?
And I was like, all right, so when were they? They literally came out on the same day, so they both released November 18th, 1988. So I don't know. It was one of those two, though. It was either Oliver and Company or The Land Before Time.
But no way. Sweet movie morsel, everyone. Oliver and Company and that, Land Before Time came out on the same
that,
day.
That was the
isn't that crazy?
The first Barbenheimer event was right there.
Yes. These big, huge, competing animation studios. And they had the big Christmas release of 88.
So it was one of those two movies. I'm not sure which one I saw first.
Yeah, those
birthday
are
is a couple days after Christmas. So we're pretty certain his parents probably brought him for his birthday. The one
maybe
of those.
Maybe he did a double feature. Those were always healthy.
Exactly. Yeah,
we love a good double feature.
It's funny because when Keeks and I were talking about our first movies that we watched, I feel like I always say it, but I'm pretty sure it was Phantom Menace. I like to say the Phantom of the Menace. That's like the inside joke here at Sweet Film
Talk.
Yes. But we were living in Moab at the time, and it was really quite the marketing that I really remember. I was like 6 years old. So moving on, when you guys hear that that movie theaters are dying, what made you have, you know, that ability to take that risk to open up a movie theater during these times, especially post-COVID, you know?
Especially,
I mean, it's definitely not wrong, but, you know, to be fair, they've pretty much been talking about movie theaters dying since the Great Depression. I mean, honestly, when the Depression started, like, everyone was certain the movie theater, like, cinema was going away. But it's actually when it boomed.
When it blew up.
Yeah.
People needed it. So
similar thing in, you know, pretty much every war since then. There's been bumps. But cinema has been – cinema, it's rough. And, you know, like, it's very easy today to be like, well, there's literally any way you want to watch a movie, you can watch it. You can watch it on – phones and tablets and computers and TVs, and they've shortened the release window between when a movie comes out in movie theaters to when you can get it digitally. Sometimes, you know, they still have studios that kind of fight for the same day release in movie theaters and at home. So yeah, it's a struggling thing, but it's resilient. And I think it's resilient not because it's a special form of watching movies, but because it's a communal form of watching movies. There's something about going to a place with other movie lovers and seeing something on a big screen that I don't think is ever going to go away.
We were diving into some research because you're not wrong. It's one of those, do you take a risk on something that is notorious for having fairly low profit margins? And, you know, the studio needs to have their cut and, you know, all the things that come with a business like that. We were actually surprised to see a lot of the research that has been coming out about the industry in the years since the pandemic and how it actually has been a growing industry. But like Joe was mentioning earlier, I think it's not just that it's growing, it's also that it's transforming. And yeah. I think it's really about making sure that you are listening to what people really want and what they gravitate towards. It's why we have that chalkboard in our lobby, and it's why we, you know, invite folks to also post things to us on our social media channels, because we want to know what people want. We know what we love. Like Joe said, we know what we would go to see in a theater. But at the end of the day, it's not about what we would see in a theater. It's about what our community would watch in a movie theater. And we're still shocked. 4 months in, I know we're still pretty new at this, but 4 months in, we'll have a weekly lineup, and you know, we'll have somewhere between half a dozen to a dozen titles, and we have the ones we think are going to do the best and the ones we think that are going to be mediocre. And man, 9 times out of 10, it's the exact opposite of what we anticipated. And so I really think it's about making sure that you are being a good listener and providing something for the community that they want.
I think you could easily make, you know, kind of the similar points for live sports. You know, like, you can watch any sport you want at home. Why do you go watch it live? It's more expensive to go to live sports, the same way it's more expensive to go to a live movie theater. There's something about that experience of being there in person. And like I said, with a group, there's nothing like hearing a group or being part of a group that cheers for the same moments or claps for the same moments or reacts for the same moments. And that's not something you necessarily get at home or on your phone by yourself, is being in that communal space.
Man, and I think it's something that's craved more today than ever, because we do so much viewing of content at home. So I think it actually becomes more sacred almost.
Absolutely.
That's interesting that you said that argument, because I've never really even thought about the sports argument and whatnot. So but yeah, I agree. I think what's helped movies now is like social media, like Letterboxd. Like there's that community of moviegoers that, and everybody has an opinion on a movie, whether good or bad, whether you agree or disagree. It's really, movies are subjective, and they also, you know, bring people together. So yeah, really great, interesting take.
A really big part of it is the fact that what's happening is kind of what Devorah is saying, is there's a shift. It's no longer that there's a 1 or 2 year break. So something comes to the movie theater, you either see it there or you wait a couple of years before you get another chance to see it, to where it's so immediate that the only movies that are doing huge are the really good ones. When there's still a good movie that comes out, the box office does huge numbers. People still want to go see stuff in the theaters. We just don't need to go see the bad stuff anymore.
That's true. We actually just had a gentleman who was standing chatting with us. We still have our Godzilla Minus One poster up from when we showed that for a week. And he was talking about how he was sharing a conversation he had with some friends where they were listing that as the best film of 2023. And he kind of did the like, no, I don't think so. And then they kind of reflected over their movie going experience of last year. And they're like, oh, that actually might be the best film to us of 2023. But that really shocked him more because it was so much shorter of a list of films that they enjoyed of the new releases than, you know, in years gone by. You know, Joe and I have been together through so many of the big, like, the big anticipated build-up releases, you know, the whole Harry Potter franchise, the whole Lord of the Rings franchise, the whole Twilight franchise, you know, like there's been the birth of MCU, you know, just we witnessed that anticipation, and we've now witnessed it really diminish a fair amount. And we've had a good handful of customers that have come and said, they're so grateful for the format that we are choosing because they've always loved the movie theater going experience. But since the pandemic has hit, there just has not been that same level of excitement or anticipation, you know, that same ratio of, yay, a new release is coming out, I can't wait to go see it. And so where that has kind of diminished for them, they've been lamenting that, oh, we don't get to go to the movie theaters as often as we used to love doing. And with our format, they said they get so excited. Now it's the opposite. Now they're like, oh no, there's so many movies we want to see. How do we decide which ones we're going to go to? So we've had a good handful of people who have done the like, thanks for making movie going great again. So, and again, we're not slamming new releases. We love new releases. Obviously, we love the movie theater going experience. And there's going to always be a place for that. And there's always going to be a place for watching it at home. But I really feel like there is such a place for this type of a format as well.
I love that you guys touched on, it's like people are like, oh, it doesn't feel like people are going to the movies as often. No, they absolutely are, but they're just not accepting the same slop they were given for so long. Yes. As it was like they were seeing a lot of the same stuff. They'd still go and they started to lose interest. Things that are good make money. Like, they do well. The Iron Claw is going to be playing in theaters for whoever knows how long because people have loved that movie. Godzilla Minus One is back. It was only supposed to play for a week. It played for like 2.5 months. It's just going to keep going. And so I think it's you guys are like further showing like, okay, people want to see good stuff. And that's why Maven works, is because you guys are, you know, for lack of a better phrase, like playing the hits and everyone, there's so many great stuff that you guys have been saying. So I'm now actually curious, what is a movie that you guys never got to see in theaters that you're like dying to program?
Oh my gosh. Dying to program, that's a good question. I know we were talking earlier about, you know, if you could go back in time and have been an audience member for one, and I was talking about Wizard of Oz, which we did actually show that one kind of recently. But can you even imagine what that must have felt like to be in a world where everything was black and white still, and then all of a sudden on this ginormous screen everything became color? She opens that door and she steps into Oz, and the entire screen just saturates right before your eyes.
What a moment. Just talking about filmmaking in general, what a moment to capitalize on. Like, how often do you get a change of media format? All of
such a grand scale.
You can actually utilize in a story and make the impact that that did. Like, that would have been really magical to see that experience.
Yeah. Like, you guys were talking about Star Wars. You know, you hear so much from the generation that did get to experience A New Hope in the theaters for the first time, and that whole that first moment with the spaceship just coming like right over your head, and how that was just so epic. You know, today that's so normalized, but at the time it was just so groundbreaking.
For me, is so kind of the answer to your question, stuff that I'm excited to program, I think for me it's the hidden gems. You know what I mean? Those movies that I feel like I maybe know, but not a lot of other people are aware of. I know one that I'm still trying to get the rights to, I'm really hoping I can, is a 2000 movie called Battle Royale, which is a Japanese film.
Oh, yeah. I've heard of that one.
Yeah.
Whoa. So,
yeah. Never seen it. Yeah. So I think it's a really kind of neat movie. Like, I would love to be able to show that and have people come and experience it. I know we did Dial Code Santa Claus, which was kind of a similar sort of feel during Christmas time. Which was
like Seven Samurai was like that as well. We were just so pleased to see how meaningful that was to people to show Seven Samurai. We had a decent attendance for that. That people were just. And what's funny is that I grew up, you know, my dad was so into Westerns. And so Magnificent Seven was the one that I always knew growing up. I didn't really know Seven Samurai. It wasn't until I was really older that I knew kind of, you know, the whole, all these films that have kind of been connected. You can even put Bug's Life in that same kind of connection together. But we were surprised. Magnificent Seven wasn't as big as Seven Samurai. People got so stoked for Seven Samurai. You know, this foreign film from 1952. I think 1954, somewhere in there. We love that. We had someone say that to us. They're like, man, you're doing all kinds of stuff and even obscure things. And I said, but yeah, that's that's what we want. The whole point of what we're doing is it to be is that there is something for everyone. I know when I've gone to take my nieces to the movie theater, I mean you're just kind of really locked in by whatever is out, whether it's Mighty Paw Patrol or Migration. Whether you're excited about that or not, that's your option. And for us, we want to make it so there can be more options out there, and there can be something for everybody, that you can just be so excited to have that experience with someone you're excited to have it with.
I like that you mentioned Wizard of Oz. I need to add Battle Royale to my watch list.
So
that is to my watch list. But I don't know if you guys have ever heard of Brett Goldstein. I kind of want to go off script here and ask you this question.
Do it.
But he plays Roy Kent in Ted Lasso. Have you ever seen that? And he has his own podcast.
I've heard how great that is, and we've been so busy, I still have not watched it. I want to so bad.
Yeah, Ted Lasso's great. But he's one of the main characters, and he has a podcast called Films to Be Buried With. And he asks, celebrities, guests, and any people like that come onto his show, questions about film and their life through film. And one of his questions that he asks is, what is objectively the greatest film? Not maybe your favorite, but when you mentioned Wizard of Oz, Keeks and I did this to each other's interview, like at the Film to Be Buried With. And I said Wizard of Oz just because of, you know, how it was ahead of its time. And it still has really progressed well with time and has aged well. So I want to ask you both, what is objectively, in your opinion, the greatest film ever? Maybe not your favorite, but yeah, would love to hear your thoughts.
Off the question again.
That's a horrible question to have to answer. I don't know if I should be committing so quickly, but I'm going to just jump out there, especially because it is very new film. It just came out very recently. But I have to say that I was absolutely enamored by Spider-Man No Way Home. I thought it was so brilliant to be able to bridge together three separate generations of Marvel fans, even spanning prior to the MCU's birth, and be able to take these three individuals' storylines and mesh them together so seamlessly, and to be able to provide a message to you know, our society of, it's so easy to feel alone. Because again, I think this is so relevant now that we are so connected online, but we're not always as connected in person with the way that we've seen shifts in the last 3-4 decades in our society. I felt like it was just such a fun version of, it's so easy to feel like you are going through something all by yourself. And it's more common that you actually are going through something that someone else knows exactly what you're going through. And they might literally be a universe away, but they know exactly what you're going through. And we can find ways to be connected to each other, which again, I think film is such a beautiful way to do that for us. When we can find ways to feel connected, it just helps us to process what we need to process. It helps us to have grace with each other better and be able to just be more patient and understanding with each other. It helps us to, you know, lean into the benefit of the doubt of like, oh, maybe that person's just going through something. And I just thought Spider-Man was so fun. And for me, I want to say I was in high school or college when the first Tobey Maguire one came out. So it was just a very like personal connection for me as well to have experienced those films as they came out and all the criticism some of them got and all the love that a lot of them got, and to have them all just culminate and, you know, the whole message of, you know, not giving up on people and trying to be there for these villains. And I thought it was so beautiful. It's just so great. I don't know if that's the right answer, but there's the first one that comes to me.
I love that. I love that.
It's such a hard one. For me, just a quick thought, and I'm sure after we get done, I'll think of my exactly. answer. Yes. The Grave of the Fireflies comes to mind for me.
Ooh.
Wow. I just kind of adore that movie. I just think it's so powerful and so beautifully done, and it just tugs at your heartstrings like I feel like no other movie does, in both just feeling like you wish you could reach into the screen and help, you know, those two kids.
That like level of family and perseverance, and there are some strong strong themes in that film.
Yeah.
Very like brutal imagery.
Those are two sides of the spectrum. We got Spider-Man. Yeah. And then like, the Fireflies.
I do like how you guys like they're two separate movies, but you guys both kind of take the same things from is like perseverance mm-hmm. and like understanding yeah. other people's like perspectives. So my question I asked earlier, I realized I kind of read it wrong. So this one I'm going back to because because this one I'm going back to, and I'm gonna reword it a little bit, but it still stands. Is you have a time machine, okay? And this time machine can take you back in time to watch any movie for the first time again. And whether you saw it in theaters or not, where would you go? What movie would you go see?
For me, as I thought about it, it would be some of those great reveals. Some of those reveals, you know, like the, you know, I am your father moments of cinema. So probably either Star Wars.
I was going to say Star Wars.
No, I am your father. Or perhaps
that first time Yoda pulls out the lightsaber, and we've all grown up with him just being this little agile or little aged guy, and agile.
Yeah, I like the big reveal. So either the Luke, I am your, or No, I am your father moment, or perhaps Psycho when I can't think of her name now dies.
Yeah,
I think that she's the star of the movie, and then she dies in the first. You know what I mean? So I would probably pick one of those big reveals. That is like
you just didn't see coming.
Yeah, but nobody knew it until that moment in time.
Yeah. No, that's a really good point. Because one thing that I think our family really laments about is because by in our career we analyze scripts. That's what we do for a living, and so it's very common for us when we're watching a show or a movie to say what's going to happen next, because you can just kind of see it in the writing. I have especially mm-hmm. one sister, it drives her nuts. She's like, how did you know that? She'll have seen something before me. I'd be like, oh, I'm so excited to watch this with you. And I'll say, oh, does this happen? And she's like, I'm like, why can't I ever surprise you? So I feel like because we analyze scripts for a living, you know, we oftentimes see things coming. So when we get blindsided, it's always a really a good, powerful experience for sure. I don't know. I'm trying to think of one.
that's a great question.
Yeah.
Keeks, what would yours be?
My favorite like movie going experience. There's a couple. One was sometimes when Tanner's not here, I come on the podcast with my freshman year roommates, and we went and saw Cabin in the Woods on like a random Friday, like the Friday it came out. Like, we didn't know anything about it, and we left, and it's like one of our favorite movie going experiences. Or a Get Out, because like I'm terrible at predicting endings, and it's the only theater experience where like the everyone had like gotten up and like were like huddled in the center of each of their rows, like standing. It was super crazy. Like there was probably like 30, 40 people in there, but like everyone had kind of bunched together and were watching that third act, just because, especially like when he goes up the stairs and it kind of, you slowly start to realize, oh my gosh, like what the heck are they going to do to him? Yeah, that was really special. I don't know, but then you think like, oh, it'd be cool to see Jaws and go wait in line to go watch Jaws. Like the experience of getting to that point would be cool. Is like, and also trying not to show that you're a time traveler too, and try to blend in would be.
That's super fair.
Yeah.
We did a quick little reel when we did Hitchcocktober and just showed a bunch of Hitchcock all October. And like Jill was saying, Psycho was one of those films. And we showed a quick little reel that was a little snippet of something that Hitchcock actually sent to the film, the movie theater managers of the day. Because at the time it was just wildly accepted to just show up to a film whenever you wanted. And so, this is on the heels of you never watched a movie on TV. You were just starting to like enter the generation that had televisions at home. So it was very common to like watch your cartoon and your news and your cereal and, you know, all of your film, everything at the movie. So people just kind of came and went as they wanted. But like Joe said, because you have the death of this very famous actress just moments into the I want to say maybe 20 minutes into the film, he knew that people were going to be really upset showing up and saying, why isn't this actress in this film? So he forbade anyone from going to see his film late. The second it started, he said, he told all the movie theater managers, you have to shut the doors. You're not allowed to sell any more tickets. They have to wait for
Whoa.
the next showing. And he really changed the movie going experience and made it so people actually started to show up on time to films for the most part.
Oh.
And watching that reel and just seeing these lines of people in their 60s clothes and the anticipation that must have created to go from like, oh, you can just show up whenever you want to, ooh, I'm literally not going to be allowed into this theater if I show up late. And you know, the just like the intensity that that had to add to that movie going experience. I think that's the one I would go back to. Plus, I love that mid-century fashion. It just would have been fun. And all those cute dresses and the little heels and the gloves and the hat sitting in the movie theater all dressed up. That would have been awesome. Like you were saying, make sure you don't look like you're a time traveler.
Yeah. You're the Terminator. You land and you got to steal someone's clothes before
yes,
you get to
get
the
that
theater
trench coat.
To watch Psycho.
Yes.
Man, that should be maybe a short film. Try and travel back to see a movie. I like it.
I love
Write
that.
Get it off the ground, Keeks. Let's go.
Yes.
In the book.
Then we have another question. What is the best part about running a theater? And also, what's the hardest part?
Oh, yeah, it definitely has both of those contrasts for sure. For me, I know the best part is just watching the joy and excitement it creates for other people. I mean, I knew that we would geek out putting these films back on the big screen. I don't think I really fully understood what it was going to be to witness people walk in and just get so excited. We've been saying to each other the last few weeks, we have got to start creating a collective of stories. I mean, it's like personal story after personal story, like a young lady who Home Alone, it's just her. It is her jam. Every Halloween, or sorry, every Christmas, she watches that probably 6, 7, 8 times. And when she found out she was going to be able to see it on the big screen for the first time in her teenage life, she waited to watch Home Alone until she was going to be able to see it in our theater. And that kicked off that tradition for her.
That's
and
sweet.
Just yeah, story after story like that of how meaningful it is. I'm always surprised by the amount of people that will come out of a theater and thank us. And I'm like, No, we're thanking you for your patronage of the theater. But they oftentimes do the thank you for that opportunity. And it's just so heartwarming and so beautiful to experience. I know for me personally, the hardest part is just kind of going back to my high school job days of, you know, the nitty gritty things you got to do to keep something going, you know, mopping floors and cleaning bathrooms and all those things that you think you've kind of grown out of at that stage of life. And it's just so worth it to do it because, you know, you're doing the work. You're the one building this thing. You're the one putting the elbow grease in and making it happen and making sure it's a positive experience for other people. So that I will acknowledge is hard, but there is also like a good, like, you know, satisfaction that comes with it as well.
For me, I think my favorite part is, and it's always been, it's what's drawn me to storytelling my entire career, whether it's live theater or movie theaters, is people come to have a good time. They're there to have fun. They're there for entertainment. And, you know, it makes me happy to know that I'm providing an opportunity for them to be happy, to see something. You know, for some of them, it's something they haven't seen in a long time or never saw in the theater, or just a movie that they absolutely love. And it's just really fun to both hear them excited about it going into the movie and stopping and chatting about it after the movie. And then always talking about the many more titles that they're hoping that they get to see on the big screen. So I just think for me, it gives me great pleasure to kind of have that experience. And then I guess going back to kind of the, you know, our movie theaters dying, the hardest part is that, you know, you don't open a movie theater because you're hoping to get rich. You know, it's never going to be that again or ever. Like, that's just not part of it. It's about passion for us. You know, we love providing. It's not an easy business to run. You know, you're dealing with pretty fine margins. And so we're very lucky that it's been received. You know, part of us going into this was having the conversation of, hey, we may open this and everyone may laugh at us and nobody ever comes because they're like, this is silly. Maybe I'm completely wrong, or maybe, you know, maybe I'm right. And people do have that kind of draw to see these older films up on the big screen, and we can make something out of it. So, you know, the big challenge is just finding the right balance and, you know, keeping the business afloat, because it's not, it never will be a cash cow.
It's so true.
It's all about just making sure we're balancing, you know, the cost of all the films, because we pay the studios to show the films, balancing that with, you know, all of our other expenses and making sure, for me, it's always about a balance. We don't want to show just the movies that we know are going to get the big crowds. For me, it's important to also be showing some obscure or smaller films that maybe only have a great impact on a few people. But providing that larger variety for me is more important than just showing the big greatest hits. Yeah. I know we had a gentleman came to see Citizen Kane.
Yeah.
And he walked out of Citizen Kane. You know, I think he was the only one in there.
Mm-hmm.
And he walked out of Citizen Kane and was like, you know, I've seen that movie
like 10 times
in the theaters or something.
No, not in the, this was the first time in the theater.
Yeah. But he's seen that movie like 10 times. And he's like, I don't know why, but I'm just drawn to that movie. Like, I don't know why I watch it, but I just have to anytime I see that it's on. And so it is important for us to also show those smaller movies, because I think it's very interesting. We all have movies, whether they're collectively known as good movies or bad movies, but movies that we have created personal connections to, and that are special to us for whatever reason, kind of like the story Devorah told about Christmas in Connecticut. And so for giving people those opportunities to see those movies on the big screen, for me, is just as important as showing something like Star Wars or Princess Bride or Lord of the Rings, something that we know we're going to fill houses with. So
it's so true. And, you know, that's really the main thing for us, is just making sure that it's able to be something that is meaningful. Because, and then what's really cool is when you discover it's meaningful to other people. I always love when people just assume that the house is all already sold out and they're rushing in to get a ticket. And they're like, are there any seats left? And I'm like, oh, I wish it were that full. But I love that that is how that movie clearly, like how strongly that person feels about that movie, that, oh, of course this movie is going to be sold out. Like, I got to make sure I come and see this film right now. But yeah, I think it's going to be such a journey for us. We are so grateful for the 4 months we've had, and we sure hope we get to keep doing it for a lot longer. And yeah, it's going to be interesting to see where it goes. It's in that zone where it feels like it could just keep growing and going, or it could just kind of hit like a normalized level and be there. I do love that it feels like we continue to get people who have just discovered us and are so thrilled, or even they're so bummed because they just missed out on some titles that they're like, oh my gosh, I would have come to see this. I would have absolutely, I can't believe I missed it. And we do that. Well, we'll have to do a back by popular.
It always hurts my soul when somebody comes in and says, I got to see, please show Dead Poets Society. We're like, that was literally
the last close. Literally,
we just did it.
Yesterday, I had someone who was like, oh, I just discovered you 2 days ago. When are you going to do Back to the Future? I'm like, oh my gosh, 2 weekends ago. I'm so sorry.
It's a little late.
Exactly. So we're definitely going to have to cycle things back through as more people discover us. But it's also fun to see. We had a good handful of people the last week or two that also did the, I've been following you online for about a month or two, and this was the movie. This was the movie that got me to pull the trigger. You know, like, I've been wanting to see something and just haven't been able to quite make it happen. And it's fun to see the movie that becomes kind of the trigger movie for someone, that they're like, oh, well, now I'm definitely going. I'm definitely going to see this film. So yeah, it's a great opportunity to have this journey. We're thrilled to see where it goes.
Uh-oh. We lost.
Seems like we just did something with our audio.
Oh.
Oh, we got somebody back.
That's me talking. Keeks, are you there? I don't think we can hear you. Can you guys hear him at all?
Nope, we can't.
No, we can see him talking.
Okay. While he's coming back, we'll wrap up with this last question. I don't know if he can hear us. But
yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, great. Well, I'll go ahead and say the last question. We want to know, this is kind of, I don't know if we maybe put this in the notes when we send it to you, but your top five favorite movies. We always ask our guests this whenever they come on, their top five favorite movies. Mm-hmm. Oh, there he is.
Oh, you can hear me. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I don't know
so
what happened.
Sorry.
No, I don't know
I
what
looked
happened.
At Joe and said, we broke it. I broke it.
No, there's all, you know, we always have one little hiccup. So,
yeah,
but we don't want to make it through. Yeah. But I was just going to ask them their top five favorites. Did you have anything that you wanted to add?
Go for it. Five favorite. I had a couple people were like, how can I film something at Maven? Because a lot of my filmmaking buddies are curious on how they can do that.
Have them reach out.
Yep.
Okay.
People film with us already.
Yeah.
And as long as we can find a time in and around our schedule, happy to help.
Yeah. Perfect. Yeah, as much as we love showing the big studio films, we also feel so passionate about the filmmaking community in our area. It's so important for them to have a space to be able to showcase their work. And so, yeah, anytime we can support the filmmaking community, we want to do it.
Awesome. And then a last little question. What is the hardest thing to clean up after a movie?
Soda.
Okay.
Soda,
okay. That
which is
that
probably
makes sense.
Why it was called the sticky shoe for so many.
Yeah. That makes sense. Oh, what was the other thing Joe was saying?
Oh, it was just the most. Mm-hmm. So they're basically steps up and down, where ours is a slope. So if you spill a soda in the back row, it runs literally the length
all the way down.
Oh my gosh, that's right. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Three rows down to get it cleaned up. So, yeah.
So we'll find these like streaks and you're just going row. We had a big, huge event. Someone rented out the theater a couple weeks ago and they literally filled the house and they all had drinks. And I found one that they had literally sat in the last row and I just followed that streak go all the way down.
Oh.
Like 26, 27 rows. I was like, oh my heavens. This is why movie theaters stopped doing this. This right here. And this is why it was the sticky shoe. Because by the time you get to the front row, you've got like rows and rows of layers of layers of soda film.
Oh my gosh.
And they don't, you know, you guys have been there. They don't have the greatest cup holders right now while we work towards the goal of improving the seating. So I'm sure that that just makes the spills even more prominent when you miss your cup holder in the dark trying to put your cup back in there.
We've all been there. We've all been
yep.
there. Yes, we would love to hear, to round out this interview and this take today, your top five favorite movies of all time.
Well, I feel like you guys kind of heard one of my very, very top, Spider-Man No Way Home. Just absolutely adore that one. And then I do have to admit a couple of them are Pixar. I have Inside Out. I think it's such a beautiful imagery of the universal journey that we all go through navigating our emotions. It just makes me cry every time at the end as she's feeling nothing and then she's able to reconnect with her emotions and be able to connect with her family at the end. I just think that no matter what your story is, we all have to navigate whatever, you know, whatever emotional journey we're going through. I think it's such a beautiful imagery of that. And my other top Pixar one is actually Coco, which, you know, when it first came out, I wouldn't have said that film. The first time I experienced that in the theaters, I definitely walked away going, meh, all right, well, there was a Pixar film. And it wound up being a film I would put on in the background while I was working on projects because I knew I wouldn't be distracted by it. And so I wound up kind of having some repeat, revisits back to it through that and was surprised to see how it just became one of my absolute top films. I just think the music is beautiful. I think the message of being allowed to be your authentic self is so important for each one of us and being able to, make connections, find connections with each other. I also have to acknowledge Wonder Woman is up there. I love Wonder Woman. The first one. I love the fashion that they put her in the early 1900s, set it in World War I. Oh man, I love her so much. And then I guess number five, there's just, to be honest, there's several MCU titles that I'd have to say kind of get tied for that fifth slot. The Marvel Cinematic Universe has been very meaningful to Joe and I. The first Iron Man film came out while we were both working for that little movie theater chain, and we were newlyweds. And probably shouldn't admit this in public, but you know, it was back when films were still coming in canisters for the most part. And we went through, they showed up all with locks. Movies didn't always show up with locks, but that one did. And we definitely went through, and as very, very young people making reckless choices, and figured out how to break the code on the lock and broke into that film a few days early and built it and watched Iron Man, the first Iron Man, maybe 3 or 4 days before it was released to the public.
Amazing.
And we have just been hooked ever since. It's been a very meaningful franchise for us as a couple. And there's a good handful of those films that just are all kind of tied for that number fifth slot for me, that I love them so much. I love the MCU.
That's a great reason.
I know we're in superhero fatigue right now, but I'll always love them.
And I think going back quickly, it's like people are sick of the bad ones. Like all the good ones did great this year. Like Spider-Verse was awesome. Guardians of the Galaxy 3 was awesome. Like, I love them. Give me as many good movies as I will watch all of them.
Yeah, for sure. Yes.
100%. Let's see, for me, in no particular order. Most recently, Everything Everywhere All at Once. Mm-hmm. I just love that movie so much. Mm-hmm. Classic, Jurassic Park and Jaws are both really high on my list. I enjoy, love both of those movies. One of my favorites, I used to say it was my favorite, when I had to pick one, was Leon the Professional.
Nice.
Agree with that. Yep.
Early Natalie Portman.
Yep.
So good.
And then I guess Grave of the Fireflies is probably pretty high up there for me as far as that goes. So, yeah.
Cool. Mine are quickly is The Goonies, School of Rock, Dark Knight, Drive, and Star Wars A New Hope. Those are, we have a list. I've got my solidified group of 10 list. And yep, that's the five. That. Those are the five.
Mine goes, I love that Keeks and I both have School of Rock in our top five. So my number five is School of Rock. Number four is Interstellar. Number three is Empire Strikes Back. Number two is Spider-Man 2, Tobey Maguire. That's my favorite superhero movie of all time and great Peter Parker movie. And then my number one is Lord of the Rings, The Fellowship of the Ring. So those are top five.
That's so great. Well, I'm feeling like now we tried to get actually School of Rock on our schedule last year because it was the 20th anniversary of it, I think. It was in an anniversary year last year. So we actually really tried to get that on our schedule last year and it didn't quite happen. Well, I think we're going to have to get it on our schedule this year so you guys can come and see that on the big screen.
I am there. I've never seen it in theaters, so it is one of those. The New Beverly in LA, Quentin Tarantino's, they played it like last month or something. So anytime that I get whiffs that it's coming, I'm always kind of like, I don't want to have to go to LA, so this is way better. I'm just gonna wait for you guys to do it.
Yes, and we will. We'll have to add it to our schedule. Maybe we'll make sure it's on the March schedule.
And we'll definitely make sure that we tell a lot of our audience, announce it on Instagram. Just come watch The School of Rock with us, because that is
all timer.
Yep. We were on vacation with some friends the other day, and me and our friend were basically quoting the movie like from beginning to end. It wasn't perfect, but like we probably like 65% of it. I was impressed.
It is so good. I hear his line, I like food. I like to eat food all the time. Every time I hear anybody shaming anything, I'm like, you know what? Just listen to Jack Black. I like food.
Mm-hmm. Is that such a crime? Yep.
Is that such a crime? Exactly. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Love it.
Perfect.
Love that.
We have had a blast having y'all on. We hope to be able to collaborate in this year sometime. Whatever looks like, you come on again. We have a sweet film meetup there. We do our March Movie Madness every year, maybe something with that. But we thank you all for taking some time to chat with us, chat movies, which we love doing. And TC, anything else?
No, but yeah, I just want to echo what Keith said. Thank you guys, you both, Joe and Devorah, for coming on and for sharing some insight about your movie theater and what you're doing over there at Mavis Cinemas. And just it's great to talk movies with other people that love movies and love storytelling through movies. So yeah, thank you guys so much. This was awesome.
Awesome. Thanks
thank
for having
you.
Us.
Yeah, we so appreciate the opportunity to chat with you guys. We always love talking movies.
Perfect. And we always end it by just saying sweet at the end. So everyone, please stay so sweet. Sweet.
Sweet. Yeah.